What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Numbers. And as always, I am one of your hosts, Ben, and this is Will.
And today
we are going to be bringing you some thoughts, feelings, takes on football and the way week four has went down. It's been a week, but we're going to talk a little bit about some football or baseball. I figure we'd jump right into that real quick and talk about the playoffs, if that's good with you.
Works for me, sir. Got a lot to talk about.
We do. Okay, well, I think I want to start with the most exciting, I think, for both of us, even though you probably think this is going to be a cakewalk. The Reds, they made it past the Mets, and the Mets are not in the playoffs, and the Reds are.
Ain't no probably, sir. This is going to be a cakewalk. And I'm going to tell you why.
Okay,
first things first. These are my Dodgers. Okay? Like, these are the Dodgers. We're talking about the World Series champs, you know? We're not talking about some run-of-the-mill, you know, scrub team, all right? Y'all just so happened to get the bad luck to run into us first. All right?
I mean, I'm just saying, y'all aren't the first or second seed there, sir.
I don't care what seed we are. The Reds aren't taking on us. You really think the Reds is going to take on us, sir?
You know what? I do.
I give you one game of us just playing around. But other than that, walked. This is going to be easy money.
Three-game series, best 2 of 3. If we get, all we need is 2, sir.
I say you get 1, and the Dodgers take the last 2. The Dodgers are clearly going to take that. This is what's going to happen. They're either going to take 1 game off, that first game off, and then y'all get swept for the last 2, or they're going to go ahead and take the first game, y'all take the second, and Dodgers take that third. That's about it. There's really no other choices for y'all. I mean, I'm glad that the Reds made it this far. They did great. They deserved it. They kind of knocked my Mets out of the playoffs contention, and I hate that for them. But
let's be clear, the Mets did that to themselves, sir.
They did. But that's why I'm not going to comment too much on the Mets. I had them in my futures. I don't want to say too much about that too much. But I will say that I'm proud of the Reds. I really am. They just so happened to run up against my Dodgers first. So have fun with your first series, first and only series.
Well, I disagree. I think it will go to 3 games, but I think it'll wind up being the Reds win the first, the Dodgers will win the second, and the Reds and the Dodgers will get into a back and forth, and the Reds will take that game against the Dodgers in the 3rd game. And I think October 2nd, or I'm sorry, not October 2nd. Yeah, actually it is October 2nd. I think that'll be the demise of the Dodgers this year.
So yeah, you hope and pray. But
well, either way, the Reds or the Dodgers are going to play the Phillies in the second round. Then down below that, we have the Padres and the Cubs fighting to go up against the Brewers. I think that the Cubs are going to take this. I don't think the Padres are going to be able to match them, and I think it'll wind up being the Brewers and the Cubs competing, and I think that at that point, the Brewers are going to beat the Cubs, and then whether it be the Dodgers or the Reds, it goes up against the Phillies. I have a very good feeling that the Phillies are going to take it. And as always, the Phillies and the Brewers competing for their spot in the National League for the World Series. I think it's going to be the Phillies. I'm still putting the Phillies in there. So that's what I've got on the National League. Do you have, setting aside our little back and forth between the Reds and the Dodgers, kind of where do you fall on that?
Between the Reds, Dodgers, first off, if the Phillies go up against the Dodgers, they lose 10 times out of 10. I'm not going to sit here and act like the Phillies are better than the Dodgers in any sort of form. Their year doesn't show me that they are, even though the Dodgers had a, you know, lackluster year. They didn't have anything to tell me that the Phillies are just going to beat them. So I completely disagree with you on that. But as for all the other teams, yeah, the Phillies have a nice chance against the Cubs. Well, not even against the Cubs. Let's say against the Padres. They have a nice chance against the Tigers. They have a nice chance against the Brewers. They have a nice chance against all of these teams. The problem is there's a couple of these teams that, you know, the Phillies aren't going to do that well against. And that's just because they take games off just like everybody else does. But they take games off that they can't, that they know they're not supposed to. It's the exact problem with the Phillies that I've had all year. They don't have the consistency level with games that they're supposed to win. They win those games that we never saw the Phillies to win this. That's the one that they win. But there's a couple of these games that they're going to treat as washes that's going to get them messed up in the end. I can see it coming.
Okay. Well, I don't know that I entirely disagree, but I do think that out of the National League, I think the Phillies are the best team. And for good reason, not just because of their seeding and their record, but because they've shown that even though, yes, they have dropped some key games, second half of the year, they turned it up. You know, obviously going through the first half up into the All-Star break, I think there was some doubts that we both and many others, I think, have shared about the Phillies. But they put those to rest, I think. Securing the number two seed is evidence that they were not only a playoff team, but some more of a formidable playoff team. They've stayed in playoff shape for the last several weeks, even the last couple of months. So yes, they've dropped some key games, not enough to, you know, secure the number one seed. But I mean, at the end of the day, they both the Brewers and the Phillies get the first round off. So, you know, they're going to get to see who competes against them. And then what will happen after that, you know, is hard to say. But when you get a break, a crucial break, a little bit different than football, it's a crucial break for them. It's a big deal. I think that it's going to be a big game for them, their first game, which, of course, we'll find out when we get there. But I think it'll be a very, whatever it is, whether they win or lose that series, I think it'll be the first one will be from the Phillies, and I think it'll be dominant. Whether it's the Dodgers or the Reds, and whether the Dodgers or the Reds beat them, I think the Phillies will at least start off strong, and then we'll see from there, because they're coming in with the benefit of being fully rested. They've had time to analyze what playoff contention for the Dodgers or the Reds is going to look like. And then, of course, for the Padres and the Cubs, you know, they're going to be able to see how that looks and kind of predict what their path may look like, especially as those games wind down to an end in the first round. So, I mean, same goes for the Brewers, but I think that the Phillies are going to be poised to have a better run in the playoffs than the Brewers and even any of the other teams currently in the NFC or in the National League. But I mean, it could be a repeat for the Dodgers. However, the odds are against them, and frankly, they played down from what they were predicted to do, and they've shown that they have some pretty bad vulnerabilities that in the playoffs the Phillies are going to take advantage of. Hopefully the Reds will do so as well. I really hope they do, but we'll see how that goes. The Reds
are highly doubtful, sir. We're not letting that go. The Reds will not go any further than this.
Okay. Well, let's get into the American League then, because, well, neither of us have much of a bias towards them. First two wild card matchups, you got the Detroit Tigers and the Cleveland Guardians. I think that the Guardians will win this because, frankly, the Tigers have underperformed all year.
Sir, did you see who their first pitcher is?
I have not seen who their first pitcher is. Who is it going to be?
The almighty Screwball. They don't take this first game at all. That's not going to happen. Let's be clear.
I can give you that.
As down as you think that the Detroit Tigers have played, the Guardians have played lower, okay? And they don't get to come out of this game with – they probably won't even get more than two runs. But let's be clear.
Okay, so let's move past game one, because game one does set a tempo, and it obviously gives whoever wins that a major one-up in a 30-round series. But game two, game three, you think they get swept in two games, or do you think it goes to three? Like,
guaranteed, actually. The Guardians do not have what it takes to beat the Tigers. Their lineup is completely, it's almost like the Dodgers and the Reds, but on the lower tier. Like, there's no comparison to the lineups. It doesn't matter what the Guardians do, they're not about to take on the Tigers. The Tigers, as under as you think they performed, they were actually at the top of the league for a nice little portion. They had it. They had it all together. And yeah, they started dropping down after the All-Star break. But to say that they would lose to the Guardians is crazy.
But is it? I mean, this isn't the Guardians from last year or the year before. This is a Guardians team that has put together a nice run this year and won a lot of games that they weren't supposedly going to win. They've won a lot of series. And frankly, they weren't that far back really from securing, you know, a number two seed. The Guardians, by no stretch of the imagination, are a more formidable team than I think a lot of people give them credit for. In fact, I think the Guardians
have a shot. I'm not saying that they're trash. I'm saying that they're not better than the Tigers by any stretch of the imagination.
Here's my thing, though.
Their pitching alone will take them out of the race for the Tigers. The Tigers only need two games. First one goes to Skuball immediately. We both know that.
Skuball could screw it up, though. This is playoffs.
He could always screw it up. That's why he's not my top pitcher in the league. But also, I don't see him screwing it up against the Guardians.
I think if this was last year, I would probably agree with you. But this year, his offense has to keep up. He can play well, but they have to make it happen. And I'm not saying the Tigers can't, because they definitely can. But again, like you said, they had a nice little stretch at the top for a while, kind of, but then suddenly that stretch went way the other way, and they weren't the number one, number two, number three team that, you know, there for a while they were. You know, they took a little hit, and they just did not bounce back in the way that I figured the Tigers were going to do. So,
but they did bounce back, though. They didn't bounce back in a spectacular way, but they definitely started winning games again.
But the Guardians did better, and they've done more. I just gotta
disagree. As a person that has followed both teams all season, I got to disagree. The Guardians took a fall that they never shook back from. If I'm being honest, Ramirez hit a slump that he still hasn't came up out of. Manzardo did the exact same thing. I believe Manzardo was actually injured for a little bit, so let's not put that on Manzardo. But either way, like Tanner Bibby hasn't been performing the way that he was. Like, they're star pitchers. These are people that they rely on to do most of the things that they need. Jelonski Noel, he was injured for a while, so he hasn't been in there. He's in there now, but these are things that the Tigers just haven't had to deal with. And when they were allowed to shake back, when they were able to shake back, I think they did amazing. Other than the Guardians. I mean, better than the Guardians, I mean.
I don't know. I think it will go to three games, but I don't know. I could see the Guardians make something happen here. I'm not saying that if they did, they'd go beyond the Mariners, but they're not a bad team, and there is definitely something to say for that. And I think that's going to be the Tigers series to win or lose. But the Guardians are more than capable, I think, of taking advantage if the Tigers don't come and bring their A game. That's how I would say I would end that with that.
Okay. Well, I get it, but I'm just saying, if we're thinking logically, I don't see the Tigers dropping this one. They could go to three games, but...
Well,
yeah.
The other wild card matchup in the American League, it's actually quite a... I am shocked that it's going to be the Yankees and the Red Sox. I'm shocked that Boston made it in. I'm not going to sit here in front. I think that I was very much early on of the mind that they weren't going to make it. And frankly, they continued to play all season, in my opinion, in a way that it kind of surprised me that they got it in. They did. So, you know, kudos, but, like, I don't know. Like, they turned that season around, and I'm impressed. However, they're going up against the Yankees. So what's your thoughts?
Well, I definitely agree with you. Surprised that the Red Sox made it in, but I am very glad that they made it in. And I think I'm going to have a little bit of a controversial opinion on this one. This might be a nice little challenge for the Yankees. Not going to lie to you. The Red Sox made it in for a reason. Even though I was shocked when I went back and looked, they've had some great games this year. They've done some amazing work this year with their entire lineup too. It hasn't just been their stars. It's been the entire lineup, even their rookies. It's been a nice little outing. I mean, a nice little season for the Red Sox. And, you know, I'm always on the Yankees, even though they're a great team. I think that they never perform up to their potential or what people, you know, gas them up to be. So, with that being said, the Red Sox are a team that I believe will give the Yankees some problems. This is most definitely going to go to a three-game series. And if the Yankees aren't careful, they might be out first round.
You know, I would like to see it simply because, and I know we talked about our general disdain for the Yankees in so many ways. I don't like the Yankees. I don't want to see the Yankees go. I don't think they'll make it to the World Series either way. But I would love to see the Red Sox get that upset. In fact, I wouldn't be mad if the Red Sox made it to the series. I think it'd be pretty interesting because they're definitely an underdog, for sure. Which would be...
I can definitely see them getting past the Yankees.
They got decent pitchers, you know. But their offense is definitely lacking. They're not great with home runs. I mean, Story and Abreu are the only two that are in the 20s with home runs. I mean, 25 for Story is the top. So they're not a team that will consistently go yard. And they're not necessarily a team that's got a ton of RBI. I mean, again, Story leads that with 96, which is not a bad number by any stretch, but they're not an offensive team that moves the scores that much. They can, and they've had games where they've done it, but I just think that it's going to be interesting to see if they're able to do that, you know, to actually be able to upset a team like the Yankees, who are very capable. With Aaron Judge at the head of that team and that offense of just dominating the team.
Yeah, I can see the Yankees winning, and that's why I'm not saying that this is going to be a dub for the Red Sox, because in all honesty, the Yankees definitely should win by a nice margin. This shouldn't go to three games. This should just be the Yankees sweeping. But I definitely believe the Yankees are going to drop at least one game. And that's all the Red Sox need for the Yankees to have to go to three and prove themselves. And I think, actually, that the Yankees, throughout this little time, if they actually go far, they're going to have to prove themselves time and time again. Like, it's going to have to happen. They're going to have to do more than what they put out on a regular basis. And that's the only way that they're going to take.
I concur. I concur with you on that. Either way it goes, Seattle will be facing Detroit or Cleveland in the second round. I do believe Seattle takes those, either one, especially if it's, honestly, if it's Cleveland, I think they definitely take it. I think Detroit might give them more of a run for their money. But at the same time,
it'll be a dub.
Yeah, Seattle's taking it. New York and Boston versus Toronto. I think either one of those teams or both would likely lose, but I do think the Yankees have a good chance to possibly creep past the Blue Jays if the Blue Jays don't bring their A game. They're the number one seed for a reason, but I don't know. If the Yankees do what I think they're going to do, I think they'll wind up dominating Boston, probably take it in two games, honestly, and they'll go up against Toronto. I think that'll be a great series. I do think the Yankees will take it if that happens, as much as I hate to say it. If the Yankees come in and play their A game, they're going to beat Boston. They're going to go in against Toronto, and I think they're just going to continue that. And then it would come down to probably Seattle and New York. And in that particular case, I think that's where that the Yankees will fall, because they're going to carry that momentum, and then they're going to play the Mariners, and I think the Mariners would be able to beat them. I just don't think that Toronto, if the Yankees have dominance in the first series, they're going to come in with that hustle and that motivation, and Toronto's been sitting there watching, so they got to kind of build up and wait for that. And then when it happens, if it goes the way I honestly imagine it will, two games, Yankees take it, crush the Red Sox, Toronto has to come in there, and then they have to start. Well, the Yankees are already coming in ready to go, and they're going to be itching for it. So with the fact that they lost last year in the way that they did, that would be if I was the Blue Jays, I'm hoping the Red Sox take this, because I would not want to go up against a team like the Yankees when they know that we got the first round win, we're on our way back, we just dominated, and we're not about to stop. Because that's when I think Aaron Judge is going to do like four home runs or something. Like, he's just going to go nuts. And the rest of that offense is just going to go nuts, and their pitchers are just going to do just fine. And that's where I think it's going to get scary, is if they beat the Red Sox and they dominate them, they're going to dominate Toronto. I would almost say that if they come into Toronto, they sweep Toronto, because the Yankees are a team that when they get on a tear, they stay on a tear for a minute. And there's not a lot of time between the beginning of the postseason into the World Series. So the Yankees don't have a long road to go as long as they get started off strong. But that's where I think it's going to go, is they're going to have that momentum early. And then they're going to, you know, it's going to come down to them and the Mariners if they get rolling with the Red Sox.
Completely agree. Like I said, the Yankees are a great team, and they definitely should dominate the Red Sox. There's no reason for them not to. But I got a feeling. I'm telling you that they're going to make this a scary, scary time for Yankee fans. This is about to be a nice matchup. It's probably my most interesting one on the slate for Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the Red Sox want a chance to win, they have to win game one. And it's not that they have to win game two. It's they have to win game one. And the reason I say that, again, like I said a little bit ago, when the Yankees get on a tear, they're hard to stop. And that goes for series, just during the season. If they start off winning in the series, it's hard to stop the roll. So you have three games, potentially two, but the Red Sox have to win game one, and that will slow them down. That will slow the Yankees down, because they got to come in and they got to set that tempo. You know, they were a World Series contender last year. They have to come in. They have to bring that passion. They have to bring that want to get back to where they were and redo it. They have to fix the mistake that was last year. So if they lose game one to the Red Sox, you're talking about a momentum crusher in a massive way. I don't think that if they drop game one, I don't think they're going to bounce back for a game two. That's my whole thing about if the Yankees come in strong, there's not going to need to be a game three, because I don't think the Red Sox are, once they lose that first game, I think they're that in their minds, most of them, I think, are going to be like, yeah, this ain't going to go well. I think most fans would probably agree that game one for the Red Sox in that particular series is the most crucial game, because if the Yankees win game one, I feel like the chances of them bouncing back in game two are pretty slim. And even if they do, the Yankees are just going to be chilling and then they're just going to take it in game three. But I don't think that happens. I think the Yankees are going to take them in game one, and then they're going to just finish them off in game two and move on to Toronto. And probably do very similarly to that. There's not going to be a lot of contest. And honestly, if they get past Toronto, Seattle might be a reality check for them, but I don't know if Seattle is even going to be able to stop them enough at this point to prevent them from getting to that World Series again. And let's say your Dodgers do perform. It's possible. Coming from wild card all the way to World Series is very, very possible. I could see a rematch. But
dub.
It's up to the Red Sox.
Call it a dub.
I'm just saying it's up to the Red Sox, in my opinion, to prevent an exact repeat of last year. It's up to the Red Sox in game one against the Yankees to determine, I think, if there's going to be a way to stop that. Because I don't see any of these teams stopping the Yankees. And if the Dodgers get on a tear, although I do think the Phillies are going to be the ones to make it, if the Yankees get on that tear against the Red Sox, the Yankees are all about the momentum. They just keep rolling with it. I mean, that's why Aaron Judge gets so many home runs. The dude is a menace. And he continuously plays like that. Even if no one else around him does, he just lights it up. And that's...
See, I was with you. You was rolling. I swear you was. You was spitting, boy. No, he does not. Aaron Judge underperforms just like everybody else on that daggone team. And you're not going to tell me no, nothing else. There's no way.
I mean...
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
I think I kind of statistically disagree with you, sir.
I don't care. Look, like I told you last episode, if I cared about numbers, we would not be in an episode. We would not have a show, sir.
Fair
Podcast
enough.
Podcast nor show. So fair let me enough. Tell you, that man underperforms just like everybody else. And then if we take last year's playoff performance for anything, Aaron Judge will have nothing to do with the Yankees getting to where they are, and he will have nothing to do with them losing. I mean, he will have everything to do with them losing in the World Series if they make it.
Well, I think the road to the World Series for the American League starts truly with Boston and New York. I think the rest of the teams are irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. And I definitely I have hopes that it doesn't go that way, but I definitely have this weird sneaking suspicion that we're either about to have a repeat of last year or the Yankees are going to be playing against the Phillies. That's just how I see it. I just don't think the Brewers are going to pass the Phillies if it winds up being the Brewers and the Phillies competing for it. I just don't see that happening.
Completely agree, sir. We're gonna move on.
Yep.
Before you start getting a little delusional with your picks here, all right?
Oh, delusional. Okay. So we gonna get into the delusions that is the world of the NFL?
Yeah, you real delusional when it comes to that. Let's get into it, sir.
Hang on now. How am I delusional?
Oh, yeah, you know what? Week 4 was a special week. We had our first Dublin game, our first and I think I believe it was me that called that Aaron Rodgers W, wasn't it?
You did, but you called it in a bigger fashion, and I was almost right. I was right there.
No. You were not almost right, actually. They completely dominated the Vikings in the first half. Yeah, they may have let a couple of things go in the second, but
that's what Aaron Rodgers does. I was
completely right.
Aaron Rodgers does that every. He is a first half superstar, and he is inconsistent in being a second half star. Very rare would I ever call Aaron Rodgers a second half superstar, barely a star. That's just how it is.
I wouldn't even call it the Aaron Rodgers dub. I think that was the Steelers dub. The Steelers performed perfectly, I think. Watching that game was the first game where I wasn't, you know, completely bored watching a Steelers game. You know, last season I had all problems watching Steelers game. I hated when it was the only game that I could watch because I didn't pay my NFL subscription. I hated it. It was a horrible experience. And I wouldn't change this dub for Aaron Rodgers or the Steelers one bit. I think they did exactly what they were supposed to do up against a team that I don't think is better than them.
Well, as a Packers fan, I am grateful to Aaron Rodgers. Don't misunderstand me when I was like, I wish they would have just smoked them. I want them to have just dominated them. However, 24-21 by no means is it a good game. I mean, it's decent. That's a defensive game. That is not a game where your quarterbacks are performing at a great level. It is not a game where one team is establishing dominance over the other. Neither defense nor neither offense could really get an edge. The first half is a tone setter. The game of football, I think, is won or lost in the second half. It's very rare that you see a lot of games that are like the win is established potentially in the first half, but that they're really truly won in the first half. There's not a lot of games you're going to see because it isn't college. The difference between two teams can be rather drastic in college. So yeah, like if you got like Georgia versus like, you know, Western Kentucky or something, like you're probably going to see, you know, 20 to between 20 or 30 points from Georgia in the first half, and you know, WKU puts up maybe 7. Like you're going to sit there and say, okay, in the first half, yeah, we've seen what we needed to see. Like you're going to go to another game because you already know it's over. Like upsets can happen, but it's rare. But in the NFL, that's not really the case. There's been lots of games this year, especially, and I don't know what it is about this year, and I've said it before, but the matchups are just so much better than usual. But we're not seeing games that are getting won in the first half. You know, we're seeing games that are going down to the wire. And that game right there, the score is proof that this was a game that was won in the second half. And granted, Rodgers and the Steelers, shout out to TJ Watt, as always, they got it done. DK Metcalf went crazy. There was I seen
80-yard pass from Rodgers to Metcalf for the tutty.
Was that the pass after he hit that smelling salt right before he went up there?
I have no clue.
My boy.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I remember. He hit
that smelling salt.
He threw, because I remember he threw it to the ground right after that. And he threw that awkward pass straight to Metcalf, and it went right into the end zone. That was beautiful to watch.
Like, did you see how hard he threw it? That man looked like he was a rookie again throwing it out there. Like, the smelling salt, that man needs to hit it every time. Like, if they want to go to the Super Bowl, smelling salts. Rodgers has had some weird finicky moments. But that man, smelling salts, that man went nuts.
I loved it. That pass specifically, like, because it came out so weird, and I was like, oh my God, did he just throw it at the ground again? Because he had just had a pass where he threw it directly at the ground.
you know, he was sitting there thinking, what am I going to do to get this done? He said, you know what? I need to fry my brain a little bit. He said, the shrooms back when I was in Green Bay, when I was out there doing the all nature, natural stuff that he was into there for a little while. He said, that didn't get me to sleep. But he said, I got it. He said, I'm going to go ahead and hit me this melon salt, and I'm going to throw the ball because I don't even know where I'm at anymore. I just see something and I throw it, and either the defense is going to be scared to touch it because it's going to be thrown so fast, they're going to worry about their fingers, or DK's going to catch it because I don't know that he knew who he was throwing to. He just looked, when he smelled, like when he walked up there and the camera showed his face right when he's getting up behind, getting ready to snap the ball, like the look on his face was like, what? But then he just threw the ball and I'm like, oh, that's like vintage Rodgers. That's like a Brett Favre type play right there. Like, just
the way he sliced through that defense, like with that pass. Oh my gosh. And it was beautiful. The whole play was poetry in motion. And I love
it. To be clear, though, if it wasn't DK making that catch, I don't think that would have happened.
It definitely wouldn't have. But DK in open space is dangerous. We all know this. And they gave that man 5 yards. That was not one man within 5 yards of DK. That's why he was able to just slice up the middle. Like he just.
What's your speed in there? He's not that fast anymore, typically. He's definitely a red zone threat because of his size and he's a bully. He was that way in Seattle. That's why he always got something.
You think you can get 5 yards on DK and you going to catch him? That's not going to happen.
You might catch him. The problem that you have to worry about, because DK wasn't the fastest. The thing was, DK is the guy that if you do catch him, good luck getting him down.
I feel bad for the dude that tried to stop him before he got to the end zone. He trucked him. That boy got flattened.
You know when they were showing that in the reels and the, you know, in the what you gonna call it, the room where all the secondary comes together and has to go over their successes and their losses, and they sat there and brought that up, and everyone was like, you know what, we're just gonna go ahead and scoot on past this. This was this weird moment between two veterans where there were smelling salts involved, and honestly, I don't think we want to talk about this. So as a Vikings defense, we're just gonna go ahead and skedaddle on past that. Yeah.
Man, that was a nice game to watch there. And as for the win, it was all the Steelers. The Steelers had everything to do with that. I'm not going to put it all on Rodgers, even though Rodgers had a nice game, in my opinion. Everybody had a nice game. So we're going to go ahead and give that to the Steelers. The Vikings didn't deserve the win, in my opinion. And that's why
they didn't. I'd love to see them lose.
All right, moving on. Go ahead.
Last thing I'm gonna say about this, they also did this as much as I, you know, it is what it is, but they did it without Jalen Warren. That's another thing for the books.
I knew they could. That Jalen Warren's not a game changer. He's a good running back, but he's not the factor in the game. He never has been. He wasn't last year, and he's not this year. And it wasn't just because Najee Harris was, you know, RB1. It was because Jalen Warren, though he's fast, he's powerful, he doesn't have that it factor when it comes to running back. And he showed it last year. He would break out for an incredible run, first play of the game or in the first quarter. Jalen Warren would do something so incredible within that first quarter of the game and then do nothing for the rest of it. He did it so many games in a row. Go back and watch the tapes. That he did it every single game. I think he broke out for like a 60-yard touchdown one game. And then I swear he never got more than 2 yards after. Like it was crazy. While he is a factor, Jalen Warren is not a game changer, which is why I knew that they could still take the win. Because Carson Wentz, though he does have something to him, he doesn't have it all, and the Vikings don't have it all right now, period.
Okay.
But moving on, we're going to talk about this only because I feel like it was one of the upsets of the week that I did not see coming. The Giants and the Chargers. I have no clue what happened to the Chargers in that game. And I'm not going to lie, I somewhat saw it coming, but I didn't see it coming. Like, I didn't see that happen.
That game was, you know, the thing too, that when I look at that game, like that game, it cost the Giants so much. They lost Malik Nabers for the year. That man could have been cooking this year. Instead, now Jackson Dart's one key receiver is out. I hate to say this, but I think the Giants are toast. I don't think they're gonna get anything going. Yeah, you got Scataboo, but and Dart's, he showed some good poise. But I think that was the Chargers just letting themselves lose what should have been their game. Like, they're...
Completely agree, sir. I definitely agree. Every time I tuned back into the game, I was just like, how is this happening? But then you see what's happening, and you're like, okay, so the Chargers just didn't want to win. They clearly just didn't want to have the W in their pocket today.
Clearly.
But that's really all I had on that. It was an upset, and Jackson Dart had a nice outing. Give Shador a chance, please. All right, moving on. Bills. What was that, sir?
You going with the Bills and the Saints?
Yeah, I kind of want to move on to the Bills and the Saints. I mean, we can talk about the Titans and the Texans, but, I mean, you called that one. I only thought that Cam Ward could possibly get something going, but, you know, C.J. Stroud did his thing.
It wasn't that it was C.J. Stroud, and I'm not knocking his performance.
I mean, 22 for 28 and with two touchdowns is impressive, sir.
It is, but there's something even more impressive, and that's that Texans defense. And that's all I'm going to say.
Agreed. That was definitely – Pollard had an abysmal game.
He was going to. They got Spears. For their benefit, they do have Spears coming back to practice. I don't know that it's going to change much, but it might add a little bit of it wouldn't be as much work on Pollard. Him and Spears could possibly get something going. But I don't think that changes a lot by any means. They're not going to get any extra wins out of it, I don't think. But it could take some of the workload off of Pollard and allow him to get a little – they could, you know, split that snap count a little bit, give Pollard some breathers, maybe help him get a little bit, make him a little more useful during the durations of their games. However, a mediocre defense will just have a field day with them. And I don't believe that there's a single team right now in the NFL that the Titans are capable of beating. So.
Completely agree. I'm not going to long-wind the fact that I wish Cam Ward had a better team to play with, but I definitely wish he did. We're going to move on into, instead of skipping over to the Bills and the Saints, let's talk about the Falcons and the Commanders. Falcons kind of surprised me, but honestly, I think that was more of a Commanders loss than a Falcons win.
First off, Bijan. And I think the fact that Daniels didn't play definitely had a major factor. Again, one of the things I want to point out, like I said earlier, is these games are all generally close. And there's a few, you know, like the Texans, the Titans, and then, of course, you're talking about the Bills and stuff, and whenever you get to those, there's some that weren't. But that was another game that I think I can't help but shake my head, because I feel like some of these games this week were just – they didn't go the way I think most anybody thought they were going to go. I think a lot of people still were saying that even with Mariota, especially with his performance from last week, that he would be able to help get it done. And for what it's worth, 27 points is enough to get most of these games done. Let's be clear. If they were going up against most of the other teams that lost their games this week, a vast majority of them, they would have won, just putting up the same numbers. Because they got 27, which normally wins a game. But somehow Bijan, being the answer to that somehow, they feasted in Atlanta. And, man, I didn't see that coming.
Honestly, I don't think it was Bijan that did it for him. I mean, Bijan only had 75 yards. 17 carries, 75 yards with a touchdown. Now, Michael Penix, as much as we were talking about him last episode, 20 for 26, two touchdowns. He threw an interception, but 313 yards passing all up and down the field. I mean, when we're talking about a performance from a quarterback, nah, we don't like to see intros, but we definitely see him out of Mahomes, Lamar, Josh Allen, out of all of them. So, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, good performances from quarterbacks, I'd say that was a Michael Penix win right there. You know, who was the key player? Who was the key factor? I'd say Michael Penix.
I can agree with you on that. One of the things that helped is he was only sacked one time. You know, that's a big factor. When you're not only getting sacked one time, he had more time to play with. He had more time to make his reads. And again, Bijan, and it wasn't just him. Actually, I really have to give it to Algier too. Algier got another tutty too. Honestly, they put up 128 yards on the ground with two touchdowns. Like that's not bad. Even with the Bijan fumble, which I'm not going to lie, I didn't expect to see that. But it just, that game, I think the injuries definitely did not help, help the Commanders. You know, they didn't have a consistent run game. I mean, Kroski Merritt got 7 attempts, 47 yards. Rodriguez ran 7 times for 59. I mean, Mariota ran a couple times himself, but like they didn't get any ground touchdowns. I mean, they both Penix and Mariota threw essentially the same number of passes. Mariota was just less consistent. He only got 16 of 27. I mean, he had 156 yards. But he threw for two touchdowns. You know, he did throw that interception. But, like, his performance wasn't entirely on him. I mean, yes, he should have done better, but you're missing your main receiver, and you're getting pressured quite a bit. He got sacked twice, which isn't a lot, but it's enough. He was under pressure a decent amount during the night, and there was one of the other major concerns is Washington had, I believe it was 4 fumbles, and that's crazy. You know, they had momentum killing plays that just happened, and the Falcons, my thing is the Falcons really should be performing the way they're performing now. They should be doing that consistently because you've got Bijan and Algier. Really, a couple years ago, he was the main back he was the better of the two years ago. And last year, he kind of didn't get as much attention because, well, they let Bijan eat. But I mean, if we're being honest, they have a good team. You know, if the only problem is they gotta start getting, they gotta consistently do more. And here, I talked the other day about Kyle Pitts. The man got in the end zone. He's in the end zone. That's crazy. It's good. That's really good. He's doing something that he has struggled to do consistently for a long time. He's in the end zone this week. And of course, Drake London had a great game. Bijan also, and here's another thing. Bijan is not just a running back threat. He had 4 catches for 106 yards. 106 of those yards that Penix has is from Bijan. 110 are from Drake London. Those are two really good athletes that play football, and they're both phenomenal. And then he was able to just spread the ball out a little bit elsewhere. granted, most of those went to London, Robinson, and Pitts. Only three other players caught a ball. So, you know, there's clearly, you know, Penix has his favorites, and for good reason. But I don't know.
I get it. You know, I'm saying it takes a good pass, though. Nobody can catch a bad one. So, you know, I get it. Well, that he had his key factors, but when it comes down to it, like I said, if we're looking for key quarterback performances, we got to give it to Penix this week, just because he performed the way that he was supposed to.
I'm with you on it. Mariota
didn't have an answer.
He bounced back from being benched for being bad, so good for him.
All right. Moving on to the Bills, there's really nothing too much to say. Of course, they were supposed to win. Especially bouncing off of week three, where they almost lost to the Dolphins, would have looked way, 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 way bad if they would have kept this close with the Saints as well. And they actually did, honestly. That game was close all the way up until like the fourth quarter when they, got that last touchdown to spread it out. Other than that, there was no, they didn't have an answer for the Saints. And it's scary, honestly. I may not have too much to say, but I will say this. Josh Allen, bro, you're not gonna last up against these other players like everybody thinks you're going to if this is what you're gonna play like up against the Saints and the Dolphins. These are supposed to be wash games. These are just supposed to be games where you come in and play around, you know? But it seems like the defense isn't stopping nobody. And Josh Allen isn't spreading the ball like he was supposed to. Like, I get it. He had two touchdowns in that game, but he also threw an interception. Once again, yeah, if we're talking about quarterback performances, Josh Allen's is pretty much close to Mike Penix. Only difference is 100 yards, really. And it's Penix's way, by the way, because, you know, Josh Allen only threw for 209.
I still stand by that the Bills are missing something clearly with the receiving room. I don't know what it'll take. But even with that and some of that vulnerability, James Cook continues to be a monster. I mean, 22 for 117 and a tutty. At the end of the day, the Bills win a lot of their games, I think, on the ground this year. And I think that's how it will remain unless they make some sort of acquisition, whether it's through free agency or trade, where somebody just turns into a clear number one. You know, I don't know why, but I feel like that Allen is struggling to find his main target. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking Coleman. I'm not knocking Shakir, but I just, they all contribute. That's the one thing that I do say, that even though he may not have a number one, they all contribute to the receiving game. Shakir, Coleman, Kincaid, Palmer, Cook, Hall, Samuel. I mean, every one of them had at least one catch. Some had multiple catches. Granted, none of them got any exceptional amount of yardage. But, I mean, other than Shakir, I mean, Shakir had 61 yards after catch. So one thing that tells you, so he had five targets, five receptions. He had 69 yards. He had 61 yards after, So he had 61 yards yak. So yards after contact. So he's not doing bad, but like he's definitely good at once he gets the ball, then he makes yardage. So some of that, to Shakir's credit, is he's good at making a play and getting further downfield. He's not just getting smacked and dropped always. But, I mean, Shakir, he's like the only really, truly good receiver. I mean, he was targeted five times. The second closest was Coleman at three, and Will Cook had three. But, like, on catches, there's no number one in Buffalo. There's no, I'm throwing you the ball and you're going to get, you know, 12, 13 targets. You're going to get the ball, you know, 10, 11 times. You know, there's no one in that room, in that receiver room, that's going to do that, and including his tight end. So That, I think, is his biggest problem. This is why we're not seeing utter dominance from Josh Allen. But I'm telling you, they get themselves that right receiver, that guy that will allow either the other receivers like Shakir, like Coleman, to continue making those plays, but with a little more open, more plays that will allow somebody to make a play instead of everyone being blanket covered. I think that would change that for Allen.
Agreed. I think Khalil Shakir is definitely their best receiver, and I definitely think they should try to get him a little bit more open for those plays, because when he breaks out for yards.
And well, here's the problem, though. Amazing. Shakir, so for, and this is something that every number one receiver needs a number two. And I mean, let's think about it. Dallas went and got George Pickens to put across from CeeDee Lamb. Before CeeDee got hurt, you could see the benefit of that. You have Ja'Marr Chase, he has T. Higgins. You have Jefferson over in Minnesota, who has Addison. You have, even in Detroit, St. Brown has Williams. Okay, Green Bay, you have, it's kind of hard to say right now who the real number one is there, but they're all really good for the most part when it comes to where they're at. But there's a number two that is paired. We are not in an era of football where you just need a solid number one receiver. You need a good, true number one, and you need a number two who understands his role. Because the number two is the one that's going to get open more times than the number one. Your number one is going to get covered because he's the guy that stretches the field. Tyreek Hill versus Jaylen Waddle. Granted, both of those are capable of being a number one. But if we're being honest, on the depth chart, you're going to look at, and you're probably going to see Tyreek Hill as number one. The defense is going to cover Tyreek, and that's going to open up Waddle, which is why Waddle seems to do a little bit more, because they're blanketing Tyreek. You can look at any legitimate team, and you can see that. You talk about the Saints when we're looking at this game. The reason that the Saints did much of anything was because of Olave. I mean, he is their clear number one receiver. He's the only one that had a touchdown. Granted, he only caught three of his six targets. He got three catches out of six targets or 20 yards, but he got that touchdown. Shaheed, I'm not saying he's terrible, but he ain't a true number two. The Saints are missing it. So we could look at a lot of these teams that are struggling to get wins. When you don't have a true number two, your number one is going to have to fight a lot harder, and you're going to have what most teams that lose, you're going to have the same outcome, because this ain't Matthew Stafford throwing to Megatron. This ain't Rodgers throwing to Devontae Adams. This isn't one of those situations. And I mean, we could even look at the Rams. Devontae, Puka, number one and number two. So that's, when it boils down to it, I mean, that's a problem the Texans are having. And they won against a soft Titans, but, you know, the Colts, they're doing what they're doing. They have a true number one, Michael Pittman, and then they have a number two. The Steelers, they have a number one and a number two. The Commanders, with McLaurin out, they don't quite have a number one and a number two anymore. Hence, one of the reasons the Falcons won. And that doesn't mean that you can't sub that number one receiver, like the number two receiver, out with a tight end. Like, some teams can use a tight end to the same effect, and there are teams that do that really well. But there are other games, like I want to talk about the Eagles and the Bucks. Prime examples. So.
Well, speaking of the Eagles and the Bucks, Jalen Hurts did what he was supposed to do in this game, but the Eagles almost let this game slip.
And they did.
I don't like that. I don't like the fact that they almost let it slip. I don't like the fact that they were, you know, proud of the performance towards the end of the game. No reason for them to have let up so much, so many points, especially. Let's see, they were held to 3 points, 6 points by the end of the half, and then just erupted to get 25. We're talking about an entire 3 touchdowns. They even had a safety. All I'm going to say is, if there was 5 more minutes left in this game, Baker Mayfield may have upset the Eagles.
So, honestly, when I look at the recap for Philly and Tampa Bay, Philly won the first half by a large margin, sir. That second half, like I said, the second half is where a team wins, whether it's their offense or their defense. It's where they win a game at. And they won their game because their defense came to win. Their offense put up 24 of their 31 in the first half. And they scored enough in the third quarter. They put up that touchdown to compete with the Bucks, who put up 14. This game, shout out to Baker, for real. That man, he played his heart out. But ultimately, the Eagles defense, they came to play, and that's reflective of the fact that Jalen Hurts only threw for 130 yards. He didn't have to do a lot. He got 2 touchdowns, no picks. Now, Dallas Goedert, I've been waiting for his breakout, his true breakout, and this was that time. He got both of those touchdowns. But they didn't have to do anything. Like, they ran the ball, and it was a poor running performance. 19 for 43. He got a tutty, but we're talking Barkley. He had a 2.26 average.
Terrible.
Jalen Hurts ran 9 for 62. Hurts had way more yardage. Almost, he had 19 more yards on the ground in 10 less attempts. Like, his average was almost triple. Actually, it was triple of what Barkley did. Like, I don't like it.
I don't like the way that the Eagles are performing, and I'm going to go ahead and put that out there.
I'm with you. I can't stand it.
The Eagles can't do what they're doing and expect to keep on winning games. Like I said, I'd say about 5 more minutes, because they ended up having to punt the ball away, or what was it at the end of the game, that last play. I believe they had the last play of the game was a safety. But they ended up turning that ball over, not even 5 minutes, maybe even 2 or 3. Baker Mayfield moves that ball back down the field, and they lose the game. That's it. And I don't, from the Super Bowl champs, we expect to see more. And that's not what they're showing us. And I don't like
it. So the only thing I'm going to say, last year, the Eagles were not exceptionally great in many of their games. Yes, Saquon had an amazing year. I don't think he's repeating that this year. He's well behind pace, I think, on that.
Maybe, but not offensively, but defensively, yes, sir. They were definitely on point. That was the whole thing about the Eagles.
They were much better about their defense this last year than this year. Granted, their defense is still vicious, but last year they just seemed to play better. I don't remember if the stats would reflect any differently at this point last year versus now, what they had or didn't have. But I just remember watching a lot of their games and being like, yeah, their offense is, you know, running Saquon, and it's hard to stop Saquon, or, you know, Hurts. You know, they can do a lot of RPOs, and they can do a lot of play actions, which sets up the defense pretty badly. So, you know, there were things that they were able to capitalize on, which is why they wound up winning the games that they needed to win and ultimately were able to get into the Super Bowl. But it was their pass rush that just dominated the defense, or dominated the NFL. I mean, that's why they got after Mahomes so much. I mean, granted, that's a suspect offensive line in Kansas City, hence their struggles this year already. But I just, when I look at that game, I just, again, I say I give a shout out to Baker. I feel like, honestly, that should have been his game. I think if he would have won that game, I think a lot of the doubts that would have, that were there, would have went away. But unfortunately, they lost, and with them losing, I do personally believe that those doubts will still linger. They're just not the team to beat. That's what a lot of people are going to say, because the Bucs were on a nice roll, and they were going through it, and they put up a good fight in this game. But unfortunately, the Eagles won that second half. It doesn't matter if they were outscored. They won the second half, and that's where the game was won at.
Okay, we're going to skip through a couple of these games because we are definitely running out of time here, sir. I believe we're actually over time here. So with that being said, Jared Goff beat the Browns, of course. We called that, even though the Browns kept it close within their first quarter. They were looking good against a team that was definitely supposed to dominate them throughout the entire first half. They only had two touchdowns in that first half, and I believe they got like three more in the second, or two more in the second half.
I'm with you.
Yeah, that's nothing to speak on right there. Patriots and Panthers, once again, another game not to speak on really, because of New England Patriots. Yes, y'all dominated the Panthers, but
it's Panthers. The Panthers.
All right. The Rams and Colts, another game that we called for the Rams. Daniel Jones didn't perform as well as he had in these last couple of games, but we knew that wasn't going to happen just because the Rams defense came to play. They did not come to play with Daniel.
All they had to do was take Jonathan Taylor away.
Yep, pretty much. And that's exactly what they did. He had no touchdowns, 76 yards, but with 17 carries, it's not really that impressive.
Nope. He was the leading rusher pretty much. Yeah.
Ravens and Chiefs. Not going to lie, I thought that the Ravens were going to try to at least keep this close, but they definitely – it was horrible. it was horrible.
I'm done with the Ravens this year. I have no faith that they're going anywhere.
I told you. What I tell you, Benjamin?
You said this is a year.
Last year for Lamar Jackson, I have no more excuses for that man. I have no more high hopes for him. He's going to have to show and prove it from this point out, because at the end of the day, the Ravens are not playing up to their name. I don't care how nobody looks at it. They are literally one of the most well-put-together teams in the league, and they do not play like it.
He has no excuses this year. He has D-Hop, he has Bateman, and he has Zay Flowers. They have Derrick Henry, they have Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely.
If we're talking about teams that are well put together and have all the pieces that they need to actually go and take the entire thing, the Ravens have to be at the top of that list. And they do not act like, and I don't like it at all.
Yeah, they're terrible. I'm done with that. The Ravens, I'm not even going to bet on them to win anything this year.
Go Chiefs. They did their thing in that game. Hollywood Brown, Thornton, all of them. Yeah. Moving on, the Bears in a game clincher. I like this game.
That was a game clincher for sure.
That was a nail biter all the way up until the very last point. Honestly, if they hadn't missed that field goal or had that field goal blocked, we would have been talking about the Raiders taking it. But all in all, nice job for Caleb Williams. Once again, I think the Bears have something this year, sir. I think they're shaking off that old rust.
I'm getting tired of the NFC North being weirdly competitive. I miss the days when the Packers just owned it. We got a rough division to play in this year. But
last but not least, while we're talking about the Packers, they came down to the only game that I've ever seen end in a tie in overtime. When was the last time that happened, sir? Do you know?
It's been a while since we've seen a tie. Well, I mean, we've had ties this year, I guess, but
we're talking about ties and overtime and a game clincher like that. Like, we're talking, like, this was a scoring phenomenon, sir. 40-40?
Yeah, yeah.
They just cracked 80 points. That over was shattered by 40, by almost 40. Their over was 46 and a half.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about this game. The defense on both sides were not it.
Dobbs had 3 touchdowns, sir. Pickens had 2.
I don't got nothing else to say on this. It ended in a way that I think neither team got the satisfaction. That tie really was a disappointment, I think, more than being a loser. I would have rather the Packers have lost that game than to have it in this way. This was, Dak Prescott said it really well in a post-game interview, made it very clear. He's disappointed. Losses hurt more, but the way this game went, neither team. This was a storyline. This is a storyline game. For Micah Parsons, for Kenny Clark, for the Packers and the Cowboys to establish some sort of dominance, neither team. The NFC is going to be a tough year for us. Anything we do in the NFC, it just feels like it's going to be tough. Is ugly. It was an offensive performance from both teams. And my parlay, I want to wrap my part of this up on my parlay for it because I hit on it, sir. I took Javonte to be an anytime scorer. I took Josh Jacobs to be an anytime scorer. I took Dak Prescott on the alternate 200+. I took Love on the alternate 175+, and Javonte Williams on 40+ yards. I hit.
Solid slap, sir. What you hit for?
Well,
yeah,
you know, I'm a penny better, so I got $3.42. We'll just leave it at that.
Jesus. But, sir, do you understand that $5 would have got you over 100?
Yeah, I just didn't have the confidence to put it in there because I was like, it's Dallas and Green Bay. It ain't going to go the way that it did. And, of course, the moment I decided to just play it safe, I hit. And that. But even with the little hit, whether I win or not, I'm just not happy after that. I'm just as not.
As long as you got to feel something, you know, to get – gambling is all about having fun at what you're doing, and as long as you're having fun and making money while you're doing it, so be it, sir. We don't judge over here, but we always know where there's a will, there's a way, and indeed. A parlay will be ensued for this weekend's games coming up for week 5. But that's all we have for the night, you guys. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Beyond the Numbers. If you made it this far, make sure you go follow our Facebook page. Follow us on TikTok. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us wherever you go to do anything, all right? We love to see it, and we love you guys for watching or for listening, however you see us. Thank you. Benjamin, you got anything?
Nope. You wrapped it up nicely, so that's all for me.
All right, you guys, have a nice night and peace.